J6, number 13B.
Yes, and then she says on page 319, the various doctrines and theories which presuppose life and intelligence to exist in matter are so many ancient and modern mythologies. And in page 523 in the textbook, the creations of matter arise from a mist. Well, we saw that, didn't we? But a mist went up. But a mythology went up. But a mystification went up. Or false claim, or from mystification, and not from the firmament or understanding which God erects between the true and the false. In air, everything comes from beneath, not from above. All is material myth, instead of the reflection of spirit. And the serpent, that's what beguiled Eve. Serpent, she defines in the glossary as subtlety, a lie, the opposite of truth, name error, the first statement of mythology and idolatry. Isn't that wonderful? That it was mythology that beguiled Eve. And that mythology became idolatry. And then we get again in the sixth chapter, we will see that idolatry took away the ability to heal. We lost it because of false idolatry into mythology. Just terrific. This is big stuff. But we have to realize it's radically new to the world consciousness. Radically new, and yet it's been around since Jesus and the prophets, huh? Then that whole sense there of mortal mind and its beliefs, of mind's many, matter, body, material senses, theories, death, mortal man, imperfection, or myths. On page 150 in the textbook, the host of Aesculapius are flooding the world with diseases because they are ignorant that the human mind and body are myths. So as you went on to read this article, you saw then that mortal mind was a myth, matter was a myth, Adam, the first god of mythology, and so on. And that, I thought this was good to hear this point on page 255. The mythical human theories of creation, anciently classified as the higher criticism, sprang from the cultured scholars in Rome and in Greece. But they afforded no foundation for accurate views of creation by the divine mind. Wonderful. That should also show us that that line of the human philosophers, Mrs. Eddy said, had nothing to do with Jesus. That Jesus springs from the divine line of the prophets. That line of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, as we will see. We're going to talk about the spiritual line this morning from which Mrs. Eddy comes from. And how interesting how that material line, that human reasoning line, this is that human reasoning of the ancient scholars in Rome and Greece, the higher criticism, how that brought on, that was just mythology perpetuated through the human mind reasoning, but how at the same time the biblical writers were bringing forth the first record of creation. Really interesting enough, taking the mythology of that time and changing it into a higher spiritual meaning. All right, so I just then handed out this diagram that I've done called the One Book or the Word, which is really a synthesis of what Kapler says in his book, The Four Levels of Spiritual Consciousness, from pages 29 to 62. Now you can see this diagram has this little holes on the side, which would fit right in the back of your study aid. Now, here, the purpose of it is to show the subject of the thousand-year periods in a biblical history. Really that line now from which Mrs. Eddy and Jesus come, not the line from the philosophers, but the line, the spiritual line of history, the spiritual history of the development of the divine idea in universal, in world consciousness. Now, This is a diagram that is based a lot on where it says in the Bible that one day with the Lord is as a thousand years, and a thousand years is as one day. Meaning that the biblical writers could see that mankind had to come out of a time sense to discover his timeless identity. We know that Jesus did not believe in time periods. Jesus was at work in divine science. Divine science, we've seen then, is that timeless, spaceless realm of mind appearing as life. That mind in and of life is, as I said, timeless and spaceless. And always operating in the ever-present now. That standpoint where love has never lost sight of loveliness. But to the man born of the flesh, it must be a discovery. Therefore, to us, to our consciousness, we discover our ever-present, timeless identity. And that has been done, biblical writers felt then, that it would take a thousand years for mankind. A thousand years, it says in 2 Peter, is as one day. Or one day as a thousand years. Therefore, they believed in order for the world to learn just the lessons of the first day of creation, of let there be mind, handling the belief of mortal mind, it would take a thousand years. And that it would also take a thousand years to learn the lesson of the second day, that man is spiritual, not material, in general world consciousness. And that it would take a thousand years to learn the lessons of the third day, that man is identity as soul, not in body. And again, in general world consciousness, a thousand years to learn the fourth day, the fifth day, the sixth day, and the seventh day, until we were free and went on into an eighth day, into a timeless sense. Now, it looks like this is so. When we look at the development of spiritual history, this isn't world history. We know that the world is documented in a totally different scale of time. We're only talking about consciousness developing, not the development from the explosion of the Big Bang to the first little cell, which goes into the fishes, which fly on the earth, which become animals, which then comes into the human mind and the brain. That's not the evolution of materiality we're talking about. We're talking about the evolution of consciousness. And they put that at around the time where the creationists say it began at the beginning of biblical history around 6,000 years ago at 4,000 BC. That's when the biblical writers began to feel that the spiritual evolution within consciousness would begin to take place in a step-by-step when consciousness was ready to be able to evolve spiritually. So we see then that in looking at the biblical history, that in the Bible, when we look at it from its beginning, its conception, actually Bishop Usher begins the Bible at about 4004 BC, but we're not going to worry about 4 years. Let's say we begin it at around 4,000 BC to 3,000 BC. That first 1,000-year period has the whole tonality in the Bible from Adam to Enoch under that standpoint of mind. That whole story in the Bible seems to be bringing out that story of mind, as we will talk about, versus the standpoint of mortal mind. Then as the Bible goes into in Genesis, goes on to the Noah story, onto the Tower of Babel, it switches into another tonality of spirit. Noah has a whole tonality of the third year 3000 BC to 2000 BC, the second 1,000-year period, learning the lessons of the second day of creation, handling the belief of the matter world, of the second record. And then we see that the Bible goes on into a third 1,000-year period, leaving Genesis, going on into Exodus. And Exodus has that whole tonality of soul, the third day, versus the Garden of Eden. Then you have a switch in the overall development of the Bible from the Word as the Word of the first 3,000-year periods. In the middle of Soul, it switches into the story of the Christ, which I'll talk about as we go along. I'm going to go back out over this in more detail. And then the Moses story, Abraham, Moses, Joshua's Judges story, that whole story of Soul, the third day, switches into the story of the 4,000-year period, the fourth day, of the Christ tonality of principle, with the story of Samuel, Saul, David, ending really with that with Mary and the birth of Jesus, that whole tonality of principle. I come forth from the Father, from the principle, as Samuel and David see. And, of course, that's what ushered Jesus forth, that whole principle, that Christ is principal tonality, that we come forth from the Father, God. Then the Old Testament closes around the end of the 4,000-year period, and the New Testament begins at the 5,000-year period of the fifth day of life, from about Jesus' birth, which is just a little bit, they put him a little bit before. He actually begins the new dating, doesn't he? It leaves B.C. before Christ and enters into the year of our Lord, A.D. And so from about 1 to 1,000 A.D., that fifth 1,000-year period, the period of life, you have in the Bible Christ Jesus. You have then the teachings of his student really, Paul, who became a student of the Christ through his on the road to Damascus when he met Jesus on that road, though Jesus had gone on. He did meet Jesus, came in consciousness. And then Paul giving us his epistles. And then, of course, that the whole Gospels of Jesus' life itself, according to Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, showing Jesus as a calculus of ideas. All that ending that tone in Revelation, really showing that in Revelation, the next 1,000-year period coming, the Spirit of Truth, the little book that will be opened that will teach you all things. So leaving that period of Christianity with Revelation and going on into the 6,000-year period from the year 1,000 to 2,000 A.D. with the tonality of truth, overcoming error, that whole a standard of truth, of the science of truth. Really, that's the period of science and health, the little book that is open, which will teach you all things scientifically, to give you the principle and science behind Jesus' demonstration. And so then, therefore, it's only a science which teaches us all to be that Christ idea as Jesus was, that calculus of ideas as Jesus was, handling mortal calculus, mortal consciousness, until now you see we're at the brink of a new age. From the year 2000, it switches soon into another 1,000-year period of the 7,000-year period of the seventh day of love. And that's why we keep saying that we're on the brink of a new age, another 1,000-year period is breaking in. We feel it. In fact, I feel we're already in it. We're already in that 7,000-year period, I'm quite sure, of divine science in spiritual consciousness. Now, we can see that there have been the first, the second, the third, the fourth, the fifth, the 6,000-year periods. We can see it in the development of consciousness. They're there. And the indication is if there's been six, there'll be seven. But as I say, I feel we're already in the 7,000-year period of love, where we take the model of being as our state of consciousness, where we're able to go out from that model of being and comprehend it, as I'll show you what it is to the new ones, and to go out from that standpoint of divine science, where our consciousness comes forth from mind, from spirit, from soul, from principle, from life, from truth, from love, operating as the Word, Christ, Christianity, and science on the different levels of consciousness. That's the 7,000-year period, where it's God's consciousness, where we go out from that consciousness of the capitalized terms. And that isn't the end, but in the days of creation I'll show there's an indication that there is an eighth day, which takes us into another standpoint, really that standpoint where the synonyms melt into the I am, which is really the level of science itself, that great period which will probably spiral us on to a higher and higher dimensions, where Mrs. Eddy says, once we reach that eighth day of science itself, we see then that man just spirals higher and higher always from a boundless basis, an unconfined basis. In the Bible, when you get the switch from the first record to the second record, the first record ends at Genesis 2:3. And the second record begins at Genesis 2:6. And I only have to do now from memory. I wish I had the text in front of me. But if you go back and read that, you will see that Genesis 4:2:4 and Genesis 2:5 give you a tonality of the eighth day. Because in there they say, these are the generations that have just gone forward. And it talks about how the seed was in the ground before it grew, showing that our identity always has been the Son of God in a state of isness, as Jesus knew it to be. We always have been and are the Son of God. We have never fallen from grace, ever. Our identity always has been intact. These are the generations. The seed existed before it looked like it has grown through the thousand-year periods. So when one takes the standpoint of the God's eye view from perfection, as all spiritual teachings must, and we have to, we never have gone through those thousand-year periods. We've always been the Son of God. We've always been at the standpoint of being. But the being has shown itself forth through the becoming. The becoming is not a negative thing. It's not negative to evolve. Why do we say it's negative to evolve? It just shows that being has been presented what is through an evolutionary period. There's nothing negative about it. But we always have been spiritual. That's the being. There is no contradiction. God is being and becoming, both. It would just be a limited logic to say that God is just being only and that it cannot evolve. It does. It looks like it's evolving through time and space to the human mentality, but to God it's just evolving in isness. See, you always evolve. There's always evolution. There's nothing negative about it. We make it that way. We don't understand it. No, it's just that it's an activity. It's just that God evolves, and God evolves by saying, I am that I am. Therefore, I am mind. The first thousand-year period, I am not mortal mind. Then that moves on, evolves, to God saying, I am spirit, I am not matter. Then that evolves to saying, I am soul, this third thousand-year period, I am not body. Then that moves on to the 4,000 period, and God says, I am principle, I am not personality. And that moves on to the 5,000-year period that says, I am life, I am not death. And that moves on to the 6,000-year period that says, I am truth, I am not error. And that moves on to the 7,000-year period that says, I am love, I am not hate. And it is back where it is. It is positive. Everything that is going on in the universe, including man, is positive. The human mind makes it not positive. It makes a duality. That's the second record of creation. It wants to say that there's two universes going on. One is God and one isn't. Everything is a dimensional logic. It allows for the laws of isness becomes the laws of spontaneity, become the laws of divine causality. It's all God going on. And the practice is to go out from God and see everything from the God's eye view, not from the second record of creation. And from the God's eye view, it's all perfectly natural and normal. Tremendous, the practice it takes for us to go out from that spiritual standpoint and to see the world as God sees the world.
From a different level of consciousness.
Yes. Divine science. And divine science. And that's what Jesus did. See, he came forth from the Father. His consciousness was always coming forth from God. And that is always the demand. That's what's hard for us. That's like in the sixth chapter where Mrs. Eddy said, at Death Valley, I was struggling in this sense of death. I was caught in this trap of reasoning. I learned things new from divine science. I learned these truths in divine science, that life is in and of mind, life is in and of spirit, life is in and of soul, life is in and of principle, life is in and of life is in and of truth. And then the sixth chapter shows, and that retranslates out the belief that I was ever in mortal mind, I was ever in matter, I was ever in body, I was ever in personality, I was ever in death, I was ever in mortal consciousness, and I was ever fear, and that's that sixth chapter. So you can see that they're beautiful teachings. But the chapter demanded that I learned a new channel and to reason rightly. She says, reasoning from cause to effect, we begin with mind. So our reasoning always has to be from God. The problem is education. We keep falling back in reasoning from mortal mind, the problem, and trying to see the idea behind it. We go out from error and ask wrong questions. Why am I immortal? Why is there all this evil? Why is all this chaos so negative? I've been in Christian Science for 40 years and it never helps me. All this chaos keeps coming up. From the spiritual standpoint, chaos is just the restructuring into a higher order. We never have been in evil. What we call evil is good, misunderstood, which appears as evil. That's, you can see how St. John said, I saw a new heaven and a new earth. All this calculus passed away. I'm seeing everything now from the spiritual standpoint. It's all new. Wonderful. And that's our teaching. But it takes practice and practice to welcome and welcome it. I remember we said that the only responsibility we have is to welcome it. That's Christianity, man. Man responds to the Christ idea, bringing us the highest vision. But we welcome it through science. If we don't welcome it through science, we get it through suffering. But they shall all know me, from the least of them to the greatest of them, shall go out from the right standpoint. So every day we get up, we practice, don't we? Not simply to begin with, don't think negatively, think positively. Negativity brings sickness. Positive brings health. But we think positively along spiritual values. I am mind, I am not mortal, I am spirit. And we start building up a positive attitude of coming out from the Father by going out from the divine system of reference until it becomes natural. And again, Mrs. Eddy says, this has to be natural to us. Christian Science is natural. But it isn't at first. It's abstract glory till she says it finally becomes concrete being. This is wonderful. All right, so, yes. Yes. Night dreams all go on within the mortal mind in the collective unconscious unless handled through science. It's a belief of sleep and mesmerism that just puts one back into that unconscious, and it has its own, that collective unconscious operates within its own, you know, time and space realm, yes, but those dreams are coming from that whole morphogenetic realm of all the beliefs that have ever been believed within the universal unconscious, subconscious, and consciousness until handled through science. That's why Mrs. Eddy said, Christian Scientists, be a law into yourself. That mental malpractice or the material calculus can't touch you, whether asleep or awake. But that was her teaching of that. That's the teaching of the fifth point against the principle of the fourth day in the days. A deep sleep fell upon Adam. It's that sleep. No, of course not. Mm-hmm. And they can't control us any more than the daydream either. But they're just as unreal as a daydream. It's the same ball of wax. It's all a dream. It's all a myth. It just, all that happens in, the difference between a daydream and a night dream is the night dream, we really are open to those, we really are in that whole unconscious reservoir of dreams on the unconscious, subconscious. We can touch a lot of those archetypal beliefs. We meet them every day in the dream world too, but it's the same. Until handled through science. So we don't have to put ourselves asleep into the dream world. We can always say that it just is that thing that mind never slumbers or sleeps, that one is always within the realm of the fourth dimension of spirit, within the calculus of spirit. We don't have to have those dreams.